Life isn't about avoiding the bruises. It's about collecting the scars to prove that we showed up for it. Join Nikki Seberini for the next hour as she explores heroism through illness. There is a warrior inside each of us. This is LifeLinks with the DL Link. LifeLinks is a funding initiative of the DL Link.
Welcome back to the DL Link show on 101.9 Chai FM. If you have just tuned in, lovely to have you. And just a reminder that if there's any part of the show that you've missed or you would like to revisit, please do go to the Chai FM website and you can get the podcast there. We're continuing with the show. We're crossing over to Dubai. We have Asghar Rangulwala, who's the Senior Vice President of Johnson & Johnson EMEA, who is joining us today. Asghar, welcome and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Nikki. Great to be with you.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show, Asghar. Perhaps you can just briefly share with our audience what it is you do at Johnson & Johnson EMEA.
So, first of all, thanks for the question. It's good to introduce the company in the first place, right? So J&J, Johnson & Johnson, is by far the largest health company in the world. So we are present in, I think, almost 250 countries in the world. So we are focusing on pharmaceutical innovation and medical device innovation. So this is what we do. And in South Africa, we are present. I think South Africa has been the second country after the US we launched. So we are here since more than 100 years. So that's the reason why South Africa always play a special role in our global plans. So my role is basically leading what we call emerging markets across the EMEA region, which is Europe, Middle East, Africa. So that means I'm leading, give and take, 80 countries all the way from beautiful Russia to even more beautiful South Africa. So the full African continent, Middle East, Turkey, all the CIS countries around Russia, and of course, Russia itself. So this is what I do.
So we've got a smile on our face when you talk about beautiful South Africa. It's exactly how we feel, Asghar. We've started on a good note.
Yes, that's the plan, actually, Nikki.
So that's interesting. And when you talk about looking at emerging markets, and that's really what we're focusing on today. We have lots of discussions about it. We recently had a conversation about the Gauteng health department, this backlog of people who needing radiotherapy, breast cancer and radiotherapy, and the backlog. And then we've got state-of-the-art treatments and centers and that, but there's this disparity between people using them and running them and looking after them. So as you know, there are many, many challenges here specifically in South Africa. But when we look at like disparities between emerging and developed markets, how would you describe the size and seriousness of this gap right now?
Oh, that's, I don't know how much time we have, because that's the story of, I think, the human mankind's life, huh? Because disparity existed always, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you look back the last 10 years and if you forecast to an extent the next 10 years, I would say that some of our so-called Western European markets, Western markets, we move very fast into a more what we call today emerging markets situation, while some of emerging markets, because using different technology, are moving towards a better and also broader healthcare coverage. So it's an interesting phenomenon. If you look into the UK, for example, after they left the European Union, obviously the UK is in some economic trouble and the National Health Services are getting less, I would say, providing less service than ever before, right? While if you go to Turkey, for example, where you have obviously a 95% universal healthcare coverage, the treatment standards are increasing day by day. So you see, it becomes a little bit more blurry to differentiate between emerging markets and non-emerging markets. But, you know, it depends a little bit how innovative and how much forward-looking each and every government is. Yeah, because we should not forget that healthcare is to a large extent driven by the public authorities, and it's also part of their responsibility to do something smart with the tax money they collect, right? And healthcare, exactly, it's next to education and so forth, an essential right for human beings, right? So that's the reason it's very important to differentiate also how engaged governments are with regards to providing better healthcare.
Yes, and how challenging that can be. When we look, Asghar, at diseases like malaria, TB, cancer, HIV, AIDS, and which are still major concerns in emerging markets, So the question is, why do these illnesses remain so difficult to eradicate despite decades of global health efforts?
Oh, that's an interesting question, because look, let's take HIV as an example, because of course that's still a problem in South Africa. It's not a matter there's not knowledge, there's not a matter there are no treatment options. It's not the point, right? I think there are plenty of pharmaceutical solutions to treat infected patients. I think most patients or people should have known or heard about the risk to get infected by HIV. So I think it's not knowledge, it's not availability of products and potential solution. It's just a matter of governance, in my perspective, right? Because you know, if you look how, for example, in South Africa, treatment is organized, it becomes a little bit difficult to provide access to every individual who may be infected by HIV. Testing is a challenge, and this is not a matter of availability of solution, as mentioned, right? So, end of the day, it's all about how to organize healthcare. Nikki, that's basically the what I see across many, many markets. It's just that. Also, you have very well-educated healthcare providers in South Africa. It's not like that people don't know about that. So, look, I think there are a couple of elements what the government can do better, from my perspective, and this is deployment of products. It's, of course, access to grassroots hospitals for everyone in South Africa and other African countries. So it's really about governance. It's not products, it's not knowledge, it's not education about prevention. It's really about organizing yourself better. And
yeah,
that's a very German way, because I'm German, if you hear from the accent, so it's a very German way to think about things, right? So organization is important.
No, but and you know, it's logical. I mean, what you're saying is logical and it makes perfect sense. As I've said, you know, when I keep going back, because we were just recently, not so long ago, talking about it, some NGOs actually had to take the department to court because they had all of this money, but they weren't spending it on providing this treatment for people who desperately, desperately needed the treatment. And that is really a problem, as you say, of governance. So the knowledge is there, the availability is there, and we're looking at the deployment of it and going to grassroots. So then we'd probably be looking at the importance of having enough health workers, people who are going to be going out to rural areas. You know, especially with this show, when it comes to cancer, the importance of early detection. And how do you then move into these rural areas and make early detection available to everyone? So the World Health Organization warns of this looming shortage of health workers, something of 12.9 million health workers by 2035. So how do you think this will affect emerging markets compared to developed nations?
Oh, big time. So two things. Healthcare workers, when do you need them? Most probably you need them in more difficult times, right? So it means, and if you look, for example, my home country, Germany, we have a super fast aging society. That means naturally older people need more care. So the gap of healthcare workers is not a phenomenon of emerging markets. It's demographics in the Western world where people get older, need more care. While if you have a fast growing population like on the African continents, of course, you need healthcare workers to take care of children and young adults with vaccination, all the prevention medicine you have to do. So, and then, of course, also people getting older, there's a life extension across the world, which is a good thing. But obviously, with age, you get more, your need in healthcare is increasing. So the question is, can we find almost 13 or even most other assumptions talk about 15 million healthcare workers in the next 10 years? That's a big question. Obviously, that kind of job is honestly in some countries not super popular. It's not super well paid, to be honest. And you have huge accountability because you deal with patients' life. So not everybody is willing to do that. So I think there are enough schools, there's enough basically also seats in universities to learn medicine and to become a healthcare worker. But obviously, it's not a super popular job for our young talents, right? So then the question would be, is it possible to close the gap? Or are we looking for different solutions, which is not possible with the world of artificial intelligence and digital, right? I think a combination would be the magical thing. Look, if you think about what is possible today with digital tools, if you think about also support you can get from artificial intelligence and machines, why not thinking a little bit behind the obvious and saying just more nurses and more midwives is necessary? Why not having for certain standards and support functions, smart devices, or even robots, right? And this sounds like science fiction, but in reality, there are many, many developments moving in that direction. So if you ask my perspective and a little bit dream, is that we have a world in 2035 where we have, in some countries, nurse support provided by machines. And again, that sounds like science fiction and very inhuman. But honestly, Nikki, the world is moving in that direction anyway.
Right. Wow, Oscar. Wow. Okay. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how to react to that. As you say, it does sound like science fiction. The idea of these machines going and looking after the elderly, looking after the young little children coming, little babies, and very often vulnerable, needing human connection, human contact. I so believe in that, and I'm sure you do too. But as you say, with it not being a popular career choice. And I know that AI has to play a role, and I suppose it's a balance. And if you had to think of the balance, like it would be a 50-50 human contact versus using AI or digital tools. I mean, what would you say? What do you think it would be? 50-50, 60-40? Personally, I'd say 80-20, 80 human contact.
Look, still, you know, I think I grew up in a world without any internet and stuff, right? So I'm an old guy already. So for me, it's very hard to imagine a world without human interactions, right? While if I look at
especially when it's health, especially with health.
Especially in terms of healthcare crises, right? But if I look to my kids, 15 and below, look, they're using these phones and everything like natural partners. They're talking to them. They have friends, even virtual friends, which was something unthinkable when I was young, right? So, look, I would not exclude the opportunity that, you know, people get more familiar with that. But look, what remains critical, that if you are in the most vulnerable situation, you want to talk to a human being. That's for sure. But there are many jobs done by healthcare workers today, which could be replaced by machines, right? So for example, not too long ago in our headquarters, we had a kind of a fair, and we looked into a fully sensored room for elderly care. So that means these machines or these sensors recognize any change in your healthcare markers like heartbeat and stuff. Also movements, if they see that you get shaked a little bit. So everything what we call prevention and also supervision could be done by machines already. And imagine a world where in elderly homes, the supervision goes away from healthcare workers towards sensors, machines, and devices. And then the job for human interaction could be, let's say, focus on the human beings in the room, right? So it means you can replace easily. So it's hard to quantify 50-50 or whatever, but I think the combination makes it. And I think that's also what you pointed out. The world is moving that direction anyway.
Yeah. Listen, it's very interesting. And probably with these sensor machines that you're talking about, they would probably get whichever patient, whichever area we're looking at, would probably get better care if they're picking up trembling or if they're picking up slight little changes in this and that, which may be overlooked, I think, especially in the elderly. I'm just putting it out there. But I think that, to find that balance, the human contact, and using this machinery, AI, to obviously reach more people. But then there's also, and I don't want to go off on a tangent, but you spoke about that the pay isn't very good. And I often think about that, Asghar. And I mean, you're in this market all the time. And why such an important job would be paid so little? Teachers, doctors, nurses, paramedics, it always boggles the mind. These are such important roles in our society. Why would people not be paid a lot of money to do it? I don't know.
I don't know neither. Actually, that's a phenomenon. This is a phenomenon not only for emerging markets. I can tell you, in my home country, Germany, nurses, healthcare workers, even paramedics are paid very, very badly.
Crazy.
That's crazy. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, right? But it is what it is, right? So it's you need to have a lot of idealism today to become a healthcare worker, to be honest. And I have huge respect for the talents who are deciding to go that way, because you need to have an idealistic view, because money cannot be your motivation to get into that job, right? It's crazy. It doesn't make sense. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. And we can carry on talking about that probably
Yeah.
forever, forever and a day. I just want to go back to the Global Fund that reported saving over 65 million lives since 2002. That's a lot. So the question then is, what lessons can we take from their approach to fighting disease in lower income countries?
Yeah, it demonstrates that if some people, this global fund is basically, very few people decided to go into that, right? So if there's a strong willingness, everything is possible. But you need to have a huge amount of assertiveness, you need to take risk. And because healthcare challenges, you can tackle a lot of them today, right? So this global fund idea is basically something demonstrating that, if with strong efforts, it's possible. On the other hand, Nikki, we have to be realistic. If you look what happens now in our world, collective thinking, altruism is disappearing. So what have been possible 20 years ago with when the Global Fund was established, well, is not the same what happens today, right? That the US steps out of WHO, nationalism is increasing. So collective thinking, altruism. Look, since COVID, it seems to be disappearing from this planet. Hopefully, it comes back. So, learning is everything is possible if the right people pull themselves together and have something like an altruistic mind. Reality today is the world is not the same like 20 years ago. And
Yeah.
this, I know this is not a political session here, but I think everybody reads the news and everybody sees reality. Nationalism is increasing. Everybody thinks about him or herself in the first place. And altruistic thinking disappears in this moment of time. Perhaps it comes back.
Yeah, it is. It's too true. It's very true. And you can't, as you say, ignore that. Asghar, we're going to take a break. Please stay with us. And we'll probably just have a couple more minutes left. So if there's anything that you think you want to share with our audience, we'll take that after the break. Please stay with
Okay,
us.
good. Thanks.
Life isn't about avoiding the bruises, it's about collecting the scars to prove that we showed up for it. Join Nikki Seberini for the next hour as she explores heroism through illness. There is a warrior inside each of us. This is Lifelinks with the DL Link. Lifelinks is a funding initiative of the DL Link.
Thank you for staying with us, the DL Link Show on 101.9 High FM. We've been having such an interesting conversation with Asghar Rangoonwala, who's the Senior Vice President of Johnson and Johnson EMEA. And Asghar, before the break, I said, I mean, there's so much really to unpack, so much more to unpack. But perhaps before we say goodbye, is there anything you wanted to share with the audience in terms of the healthcare industry and emerging markets?
Yeah, so there's one thing which bothers me a lot is basically there's in many markets, not only emerging markets, there's a lot of expectation towards healthcare, but there's even from human beings less engagement, right? So because healthcare is always personal, right? And it's interesting to see that in the moment you have a family member, who is affected by serious diseases, and then healthcare becomes relevant to you. Normally you forget about that, and normally you complain about the cost, and everything is too expensive. So I would like to remind the audience to say, look, it's not in moments of crisis where you need healthcare. You need to be ready to provide it all the time. And in this world, everything costs money. It's sometimes fascinating to see how much people may spend for articles like iPhones, and you take any product, right? While if it comes to investing something in your own prevention, I'm not talking about treatment, prevention, you normally save that. Right. And this starts with women care and children care, vaccination, whatever, mammography for women to detect early cancer signs and all these things. Right. It's everything is too expensive. While consumer goods, you don't care. Right. It's fancy to have a new phone. Right.
Sure.
So it's interesting phenomenon. But in the moment it hits you, then everybody's screaming for the government, for the pharmaceutical companies, for healthcare industry, for the private and the public sector. Help me. Right. And that's the right. You should ask for help in the moment you need it, but you have a responsibility for yourself. So I would strongly encourage everyone to do the recommended prevention test. Look after your lifestyle because you're in charge for that. So look, there are many, many things you can do on your side to even prevent diseases before they appear. Healthcare is everybody's personal responsibility as well, not only the government or the public sector, and the private sector has to look after it.
Yeah. Very true, Asghar. Thank you for that. I love what you've said, and we do have to kind of take ownership of our own healthcare and be mindful of, yeah, sometimes spending the money, but prevention is certainly better than cure. We know that for sure. Asghar, thank you very much for joining us. It's really been lovely having you on the show.
Thank you for having me, and all the best for the rest of the day for you.
Thanks, and you too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Asghar Rangoonwala, the Senior Vice President of Johnson & Johnson EMEA. Wow, very interesting. Remember, if you missed some of the conversation, you can catch it on the Chai FM website from tomorrow.